And we are live on Facebook on Augusta Free Press. I'm Chris Graham, joined by Josh Deal, and we're going to talk some wrestling news and notes here on the show today. And, of course, if you're out there and you have a question, comment, anything you want us to kind of respond to, we'd love to hear from you. So just type a comment down on the Facebook link there. If you're watching this live, of course, if you're listening to the archive, can't do that. But we'd love to kind of address what you want us to address. So, hey, Josh, it's been a little bit of time. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Getting a little work on the house done, trying to finish up this deck that we had, hired out for. So looking forward to that being done and getting out there and enjoying a little bit of our backyard more than we were able to in the past. So, yeah, we're good. Just hoping the dogs stay calm during this whole process. What about yourself, man? What are you up to?
Well, this is the end of the first week of the podcast in the new palatial AFP estate, I guess we can say. We moved into a new home. Live in Greensboro, Virginia, but we just moved about 5 minutes away. And so it might look a little different in the back of me here. And in fact, because I'm in a new room, my new podcast studio, I've oriented things a little differently. And you might see, if you have to look a little closely, I've tried to like represent the various things we do on Augusta Free Press, our live talks here on Facebook. I got the Team of Destiny book poster above me. That's the book about UVA basketball's national championship run that I wrote. But among the things you might see a couple of autographed pictures, one of Mick Foley and one of Lita. The AWE days that we had back when we were promoting shows back in the day. So a little bit of our basketball or football. There's a Orange Bowl book behind me right about here. Finished the fight, my Nats World Series towel that we were waving around last year. Yeah, but so we got the wrestling represented too. So I'm trying to represent as much of our world as possible in the new studio here. And I think
there you go.
Let's talk some wrestling news. We haven't talked some wrestling in a while. There's so much to talk about as a result. Let's see. I'm gonna let you start us, Josh. What's most pressing on your mind that we should get into today?
Around here locally, the Marty Jannetty situation has been a big point of conversation, and how people are responding to it is kind of, it's interesting. It seems to be two camps in particular, but one camp is like, we've got to really get a handle on this guy. Marty Jannetty needs help. Let's reach out to him. Let's try to be a friend to him. Let's try to figure out why these things, or why he keeps on saying these things. And if what he said is true, if you don't know, recently Marty Jannetty posted on Facebook that he murdered a man when he was 13, person, and because that man was trying to assault him. And if it was anybody else, it might be very shocking for something like that to be said. and it might be taken more seriously by the general public. So there's that. They're like, hey man, we instead of like making fun of this guy, let's try to help him. Let's try to get involved, or, figure out how to help Marty Jannetty. The other side is like, this guy said some really insane and wild things. And like, I don't know, I'm of the opinion, maybe he doesn't need to be on the streets. That's kind of how insane some of the things he said in the past, but today, yeah. So, but there's an investigation. It's a county in Georgia. It happened allegedly this happened, and it's being looked into by the authorities. Now, this would have been early 80s,
yeah,
when this event happened. So, that's coming up 40 years ago. So, even if there is any sort of information to be had, that's such a long time ago, and who knows? And the other side of it is he telling the truth because it's Marty Jannetty? So it could just be an attention grab. It's kind of what my mindset is.
The story was, I guess, whatever, from the details I remember from reading about this, of course, it's from Marty Jannetty's mind, so who knows what the truth is. But he said he was working at a bowling alley when he was 13 or 14, and that he was a high man, like you said, assaulted, or at least there was an attempted assault, and that he didn't mean – he eventually clarified, I didn't mean to kill the guy. and also that he had an older brother that he didn't want to, if he'd have found out about it, the older brother would have done it, and he didn't want his older. I mean, Marty Jannetty, man, you talk about a guy that you know, of course, Shawn Michaels was his original tag team partner, the Midnight Rockers in the AWA. They became the Rockers in WWE, and Shawn Michaels' stratospheric rise to the top of the business, and Jannetty was on left on the side of the road. Yeah. And I guess you look back and you have to say that the folks, Vince McMahon and the folks in WWE at the time, WWF, who made the call, probably made the right call, given that, you know, what we've come to know of Marty Jannetty and his psyche since then.
They gave him a couple chances too. So the first time around, like he dipped out, he got mad because of the storyline changes, and then they didn't give him anything to do. And he rumored he didn't know the super kick was coming, in the Beefcake episode and all that stuff. And then Shawn Michaels gets his deal, and then Jannetty just basically becomes an instant jobber, quits. And then they bring him back a few years later, and they try to re-spark him. Just wasn't working, wasn't connecting at all. And then they brought in Al Snow. That was his first introduction to the WWE, and that as the new Rockers. And it was weak sauce. It was a time when it was also on the very beginning of the Attitude Era. People didn't want the spandex and the bright colors and all that stuff at the time. So bad deal for him, but yeah. Anyway, that's just kind of what on the blogs and all the messages and PMs and stuff or DMs that I've been doing about wrestling recently. Marty Jannetty is a pretty heavy topic around here.
I can imagine so, especially locally down in Georgia for you down that way. But yeah, it's been all over the wrestling blogosphere the last couple of days, certainly this news, even though we all take it with a grain of salt coming from Marty Jannetty. I thought I would bring up as the thing most pressing to me, and it's even from a week ago. I saw what I think is the best wrestling promo I've seen in years. Unfortunately, followed up this week by a rather tepid film spot with MJF. I love what AEW is doing with MJF. Of course, he's going to be in the main event of All Out coming up here in a few weeks, challenging Jon Moxley for the AEW World Title. Probably inevitable. Mm-hmm. They've really been building him up. He got the win over Cody at the pay-per-view earlier this year. Mm-hmm. I think he has just one loss maybe he's undefeated in singles competition this year in AEW.
I think it's singles he's only defeated. I think he dropped one with his that Wardlow guy. I think they dropped the tag.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they dropped one too. It might have actually been Omega and Paige, one of their rare TV matches.
So, yeah. Anyway. So as a singles, he's been getting this. He has this long winning streak in 2020 as a single. MJF does.
Yeah.
And it's logical, thus, when you have a company that puts the win loss record up on the screen every time you see a guy. Mm-hmm. Or a gal, that they're going to have to reward that guy in this case. And I love what they're doing with the MJF 2020, of course, playing off the presidential election year kind of thing. His promo last week, which was live. Now, this week they did a vignette, and it was at the campaign headquarters, and I thought it kind of fell flat. But that live promo, or at least live to tape, I'm not sure if it was actually live, but it was at least live to tape last week.
Sure,
it seemed to go on 5 or 6 minutes. And, in this day and age, when – our criticism of promos is that it seems like they're written out for guys and gals and they have to memorize them. And because they have to memorize them, they don't have the same verve when they come out. MJF, we've known for a long time, back to his MLW days, that he is a great, just give him a microphone, let him talk. And he's great at it. But to present what he presented last week, I love watching YouTube videos of classic wrestling promos. There's like a 4-hour Ric Flair montage that goes back to his greatest stuff from the 80s. There's Dusty Rhodes montages that I watched a lot during the pandemic when there wasn't much else to watch on TV. And I think this MJF
jump in. I watched the Harley Race collaboration a couple months ago. Very underrated mic man, and just he's the quintessential low talking, he means business, he's real. Anyway, Harley Race is a fascinating character in wrestling. Even back then, he didn't look like a world heavyweight champion, but for them to put the strap on that man, you knew he was the toughest dude in the room. Anyway, and the way he talked is just amazing back then, just like a true movie star, like Dirty Harry, like the living Dirty Harry. So anyway,
since we had that aside, it's interesting to bring up that he was a world champion, NWA world champion back in the day, when you needed to put the belt on a guy that could, if things broke down, if the NWA champion was a touring champion, went from territory to territory, and worked the different territories and worked the main event guy in that territory, he was the champion at a time when your champion needed to be. If the local guy decided, you know what, I think I want to be NWA world champion tonight. You needed a guy that could actually defend himself enough and leave the arena with the belt. And Harley Race didn't look the part. I mean, you know, he didn't look great. He wasn't a big muscle guy or anything else, but he was the toughest SOB for several years. And you could put that belt on him and know that he would go from town to town with it and drop it when they wanted him to, not when the local guy decided, you know what, tonight I'm going to get the 1-2-3.
Oh, yeah. He could win it with his knuckles. That's the thing. And they talked about it several times. I've heard stories where people tried to do that. He would go to Pacific Northwest, and especially in California where the NWA wasn't as respected, and he would go out and he'd run a town, and somebody tried to go over him. Mm-mm. He knocked a few dudes out cold in the ring, according to legend, and then just pinned him and left the building. Like, nah, I'm not having that.
I'm glad you brought up Harley Race. It's just fun to be able to tell that story. So I'll have to watch that. I'll have to watch that YouTube because I haven't seen that. But
there's a few.
Yeah, it's good to see. MJ, back to MJF though. I love what the angle they're playing here. I mean, I don't think it's inevitably going to lead to him necessarily going over Jon Moxley at All Out, but
I don't think so.
They're selling it well, and they're giving him a great push. And I think MJF deserves this push. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. I thought it was a top five, top five. Well, certainly of recent vintage, a top promo that I've seen in recent years. Your thoughts on MJF and the push they're giving him in AEW?
I love it. I mean, as far as like modern mainstream wrestling promos, there's only a few that I can really that come to mind that I'm thinking, that's good work. That's amazing. And he's one of them. And I'll list the other two. It might surprise. One of them, I think, was about of course, the pipe bomb with CM Punk. And after that, John Cena started his program with Brock Lesnar coming back into the WWF, WWE. The work he did with Paul Heyman during the buildup to that match, it ended up in the 23, suplexes. That was one of the greatest promos I've ever seen. John Cena. Anyway, look it up. But what I love about what they're doing with MJF now, it's addressing the part-time worker versus the solid, everyday in and out worker. And they're all, it's the psychology of what they're trying to also do is like, this is a WWE, he's a WWE guy. Don't let him fool you. This is a WWE guy. And he's just taking you guys, the AEW fans, for advantage. He's trying to ride this ticket for as long as he can. That's the psychology. That's the angle I thought he was trying to really needle into. Like, he's not really one of us. He's not a good guy. I'm the good guy. I'm your hero. I'm the guy you need to, hit your wagon to. And he did a great job. And I even made a few posts on my this is a shameless plug, but I run a Facebook page, 706 Dirt Cheap. I try to focus on Athens, Georgia stuff, but I focus on the world at large of professional wrestling. And I was like, I posted like, MJF is a face. Changed my mind. Like, I think he, because he's a classic heel, man. He can talk you. He's one of the few guys I've seen, if we still have fans, he could talk people into their seats. And he may not deliver on the same level as a Janela or a Guevara right now. I mean, the Lucha League. Yeah. But he's a really good, he's a really solid wrestler. I think he could hang. He's a WWE style wrestler. He doesn't want to admit that, but he is. But he can make you hate him. He can make you feel something. And I remember way back, it was one of the pay-per-views. He wore a t-shirt that said, "I banged Dallas's daughter."
Yeah.
I saw that. I was like, wow, he has balls. He's not afraid. And did Dallas Page know he was going to wear that? Because Dallas Page doesn't mess around with you. You start talking about his real stuff, man. He lays dudes out for real. But no, I loved it, man. It was phenomenal. It was one of the best talking segments I've seen in 10 years, in the past 10 years. I'm not saying it's the best, but it was awesome. It made me feel differently about MJF, honestly.
It really did. And you know what I like about the MJF, his approach, the real man behind the character too. In this day and age,
he loves pro wrestling. He is a pro wrestling fan and a wrestler and cares about the business. And that's why he's in AEW.
He lives his character, in this day and age, not a lot of guys do or gals do. They, when the camera goes off, they're the person again. And, you know, we're not having Fan Fest now, and we haven't for a few months, but there was a story from a few months ago back when we were still in that era, where a father complained about how MJF was rude to him and his son and, you know, this, that, and the other. And, MJF, he's that guy. When you see him in public, he's that guy 24/7. And the commitment to being a heel, because, you know, in this day and age, it's wink, wink, nod, nod, I'm a heel, but still I want to sell merchandise. I want to make money outside of this. Mm-hmm. And so I've got to be nice to people when it's over. You know, he's committed, and it's rare in this day and age for a guy to be that committed. And as a result, it's more believable.
It is. And what's impressive about him too, because he had next to zero mainstream exposure, unless, you know, you followed wrestling sites that, like you said, MLW, and he would work for Revolution and other places around there. He was cutting good promos. He had a stint, I think, in ROH too. But he is new to the weekly TV character thing. And that's much different than being an independent wrestler. Independent wrestler, you can do the exact same thing three times in a row. Don't have to change anything. You can go carny on it and you just, you know, repeat. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You make your money. People want to see those matches. That's part of your gig if you're in that world. But it becomes television. You become a real character. You become someone, and you have to adapt and you have to change. You have to add nuance and you have to be. I think he has the potential to be, you know, when all is said and done, we're going to maybe talk about him, like maybe a Roddy Piper sort of a character in his own way, but not like, you know, not in the way that Roddy Piper was Roddy Piper. But MJF is able to make people so genuinely mad. It's pretty amazing. And even some of the friends that I have that are actual wrestlers, they're like, man, he's going too far with John Moxley trying to say like he's still like a WWE guy. I don't like it, man. I think he means it. I think he's trying to take advantage. It's like, come on, dude. It's pro wrestling. But like, and maybe Moxley is. Maybe Moxley is kind of taking advantage of AEW a little bit financially. But I mean, that's the reality of it. He's earned that opportunity, Moxley has, to bring in those huge paychecks just for being around. Right. I don't necessarily like it. I wish he's been more present recently, but I think MJF made some really good points. I don't think the points he was making are necessarily about Moxley. I do think it was more about the hierarchy of professional wrestling and who's earning the money and why they're earning the money. And it's not exactly right that's the way that the pay structure in professional wrestling is structured. So.
You know, what I'll say too is from having been creative, not for AEW, but for AWE, you know, back in the day, it's been a few years now, almost a decade now. Mm-hmm. When we were working out the two feuds, the Terry Funk, Tommy Dreamer match, we were setting up for our pay-per-view, and also the Ricky Morton, Kevin Nash match. We wanted them to be real. And so as a result, you know, we asked each guy in those matches, in the video vignettes we filmed leading up, all right, what are you comfortable the other guys saying about you? It was interesting. Nash and Morton were very open. I wouldn't say that Dreamer and Funk weren't. They were easy. I mean, they just, oh yeah, you know, we've known each other for years, whatever you want to say, whatever, you know, we'll just do it. But I mean, it was interesting being part of that process to see, you know, and so as a result, I mean, it my experience is that, when you see guys cutting to the bone like that, you know, Moxley's there saying, yeah, you know, it's almost like, I know in the case of Nash and Morton, they were throwing things out. Ricky said, well, talk about how I live in a trailer park, you know, and I'm, you know, and Nash was saying, I mean, this was the one, I'll just say, we're not on PG-13 here or anything else. No. Nash said, the only way I would ever agree to a match with Ricky Morton is if he said the only thing, if Ricky Morton were to say on a video that the only reason Vince McMahon let me be the WWE champion is because I agreed to suck his dick. And we said, what? He said, if he says that on video, then I will accept the match. And then we told Ricky that. And Ricky said, you want me to say that about Kevin Nash? I got to get in a ring with that 7-foot-tall son of a bitch. But that's, you know, so I imagine Moxley must have, you know, and some guys don't. Some guys will not say, don't say things about me that might hurt me. I mean, in the case of Moxley, thing. He's a guy that, you know, is just there for the paycheck. I mean, you know, if he had rabbit ears, if he had, you know, hurt feelings easily, no, please don't say that about me. That feels too real. But that suggests to me that Moxley has pretty thick skin and can, you know, and says, yeah, that's good. That let's use that because that feels real.
It does. And it might not. And that's also one of those things that might not have been necessarily a Moxley pitch in. I mean, he has said those. He said very similar things in the past about Lesnar and Cena and other, you know, and back when the WWE and I post WWE very, very quickly, he said very similar things. So it does make sense. But I just think it's amazing that I thought it was a fantastic way to build up the MJF character and make people think like, wait a second, this is what, but it's also, I think this match is being designed as a way to, as a faux us versus them kind of thing. And even though it's gaslighting, you know, promo, and even though it's just fake news kind of stuff coming from MJF, which is, that's the thing, he's pretending to be a politician, which is also hilarious. But yeah, it gets to the core of why people like AEW or they don't. You know, I think it's they're trying to bottle that energy and put it into a match. Of course, trying to make people care about a match that obviously isn't going to go MJF's way. But yeah, I thought it was great, and he's doing all the work on this for sure. And even though like Moxie had a great match with Darby Allin this past week, he hasn't really fed into this feud, or can't even call it a feud. Just MJF just like going out and bitching about Moxley. It's pretty funny though.
Yeah, we need to now see some interaction aside from taped things and things in a ring where they're not in the same shot kind of thing. But I will say, I mean, when wrestling's at its best, and when TV is at its best or film's at its best, is when it gets you to forget that you're watching entertainment and you're just being entertained. And so that when I watched that promo last week, a couple times I said, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. And you forget you're watching something that's a work, and you fall in, you suspend disbelief. And that's first time in a while that's been the case for me. And so as a result, it was very refreshing.
It hit me in the fan real, real hard in the Mark fan. Because it brought up a lot of good points. Of like, I have been kind of frustrated with Moxley and AEW, for sure. I have been underwhelmed most of the time by his presence. And I think that even though I think he's at this point in his career twice the wrestler that Jericho is, I think that Jericho was a better world champion. You could rely on him showing up and interacting and doing something. Moxley really is running around like he's the man. Like he owns the place, and he's barely there. He's been there more recently. He's put on some good matches with Dart, like I just said, but the past few weeks he's been there. But all in all, Moxley under delivered in AEW as far as I'm concerned. And I'm on MJF's side. So if he wins, I'll be pretty happy if they actually figure out a way to make MJF win that one.
That's a good stepping off point for maybe the next conversation point. I was on a radio show this week and we were talking wrestling, and the topic came up. So what do you think of both Moxley as world champion in AEW and then Drew McIntyre in WWE as one of the world champions there? And my answer was, you know, it's in a way it's hard to judge because their reigns have largely been in the COVID era. I think Moxley may have been champ for a week or two before the shutdown. But certainly McIntyre won the belt at WrestleMania in front of nobody. And, you know, I guess the interviewer was making the point that, well, you know, they're likely both to lose their belts before fans come back. So we're not going to really get a good feel for them. But that having been said, so I'll throw that out to you. And then I'll throw out too, I wonder in AEW's case, if sticking with Jericho would have just been a better plan than this Moxley, because now, you know, when Moxley finally does drop the belt to whoever it is, whether it's MJF or maybe down the line Kenny Omega, you have to look back at this reign for him and say it just, you know, as you said, underperformed, underwhelmed. And I think maybe the same will be the case with both in WWE with Braun Strowman and with Drew McIntyre. And so, you know, fair or not, that's just kind of the way I think a lot of folks feel.
Yeah, I'm going to take exception to that general statement towards McIntyre. I think he's been good. I think he's a really good world champion. I think the lack of fans has been really difficult for him in particular, especially in the WWE environment. But the matches he's delivered and he's been able to make people care about a feud with Dolph Ziggler, the lighting just changed.
That's okay. It's dark now. It's like your AEW After Dark now or something. So
I am.
But no, it's the underground version of our show here.
Yeah, sure. I got Free Press Dark. I'm a big fan of McIntyre, and I've been a big fan of McIntyre for a while, and I have not been unimpressed with him in any way. I think his promos are getting better. I sent you a link to an interaction he had with Randy Orton this past week, and he got very personal. He got very biographical in cutting at Randy Orton and building up to their world championship or their world title match. I think Drew McIntyre, he's probably been the hardest working champion, world champion there's been in this whole era. And he puts on great matches, works with anybody. And you can't say the man doesn't, you know, hasn't earned his paycheck. But I'll move back to Moxley. I mean, he came into AEW as a bit of a stick-it to the WWE and the way that things were going there, and the way he was being treated and being booked. You know, they rose him to world championship status, and then they relegated him to like get over main event talent. I think it kind of frustrated him. He felt stuck. He couldn't. He knew he wasn't going to get past Seth Rollins or Roman Reigns in the hierarchy there. So he left, and there was an option. Great. You explore your options. You do what you got to do. But man, him as champion has really been underwhelming. He hasn't been cutting the promos that he could be cutting for the company. He hasn't been trying to build, except for Darby Allin, sorry. He hasn't been building up talent that he could be building up and being involved week to week and being part of the team. He seems other to me. Like, Moxley does not seem like he's part of the regular AEW roster. He kind of shows up. He's world champion, but he's not part of the team. He's not one of the guys. That's the perception I get, and it's kind of disappointing that we don't know more about Moxley. He hasn't developed his character. He hasn't really dove into any sort of storytelling whatsoever since he's been there. It's just like, you know, the same old, I'm a pit bull. I'm going to fight you. I mean, come on. We get it. Fine. You're a great performer, but it's boring.
I would agree. Boring. I think he's a chaser. But with the belts, they haven't really built up anybody to chase him since. And I think he's probably better as an attraction heel than he is certainly as a babyface champion, because his work style is not babyface. And no.
He's Cactus Jack. He's the modern Cactus Jack. It's exactly who he is.
Cactus Jack or Undertaker type guy, maybe. Not quite Undertaker yet, but he'll be that guy. And so putting a belt on him, yeah, it's just kind of like, what are we doing now? And, if I remember right, the him winning the belt was sort of an accident of history anyway. It was because Jericho had scheduled a tour with Fozzy. In like April and May.
I didn't know that. That's hilarious.
He needed to take the belt off of Jericho because he was going to still work some shows, but he didn't, he wasn't going to work house shows too. Whatever they were going to do. And so, he'd be available for TV for a while to keep his character alive. And then all of a sudden, of course, April and May, we didn't have any Fozzy shows anyway. Yeah. I thought they'd take the belt off him and put it back on Jericho. And
here's the thing. I skipped part of your question when I was giving my rundown of Moxley there a little bit. Maybe it was a mistake. Maybe they should have offered Jericho a little more money, or maybe they should have put it on somebody else. Maybe that should have been like, that's when they should have put it on Omega. I don't know. That's another guy that's been hugely underwhelming.
Yeah.
And it's so, I want to be an AEW fan so bad. I do. Week to week, I'm entertained by the show, but there's just certain things I'm like, you're not grabbing it. You're not doing it. You're not like giving us something that's that different. That's my biggest worry and frustration with AEW. It's just not that different.
Say, this was the main topic of the conversation I had on the wrestling, the radio interview I did the other day. And so I've been saying this for a while, and maybe at some point I need to stop saying it, but I see the slow build towards where they're going, but it's such a slow build. You know, I how long have we been saying, Josh, how long have I been telling you, oh yeah, the Adam Page, Kenny Omega tag team is just there to break them up and have them feud with each other. Well, come on, it's August now. They're still
You've got 15 better tag teams in the company.
15 actual tag teams, not two forced into a tag team. So the purpose of those two guys being the tag champions has long since outlived its usefulness.
Yeah, and that's why I was messaging you. I'm like, they AEW needs a secondary tag team championship.
Yeah.
Just to get past this crap. Like, look, I understand Adam Page, amazing performer. Kenny Omega at one time might have been the best in the world. But you know what? They're not anymore. They're good names. They're good draws. But you know what they're not doing? They're not entertaining me. So give me something else, man.
We need we need to have those two guys in the ring against each other, working with each other to see the best they can do. As a tag team, it's a waste. And, you know, and you mentioned all the great tag teams they've got. I mean, I looked at the results. I didn't watch Dark this week, but I saw the results and I saw Private Party losing, I think, to Butcher and the Blade just in this in the crawl. And I thought to myself, so why did we have Private Party beat the Young Bucks a few months ago? That was supposed to be a big, you know, obviously, to me, having the Young Bucks lose a match to put somebody over means you're going to work those guys for something. And then they're jobbing on your internet show, you know, a few months later. So, again, I think I see the long-term plan. The long-term plan's got to be a Kenny Omega. He is the best, you know, right now we're not seeing it, but he's the best performer we see in the world. But, you know, guys get hurt too. And if we're building long, slow, we're going to have Page and Omega eventually work with each other. And then Omega wins that and he's going to beat whoever the champion is. I mean, damn, that's at least a year away at this stage.
At least a year away.
And we can't have that. We've got to have – the company needs Omega as the champ. The company, obviously, to me, needs FTR and the Young Bucks feuding for a Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express type feud that takes years to resolve. They need to start that now. I see them building that up, having them on the same side right now in these 8-man and 12-man tag matches. Okay, we get the point. Now let's break them up and let's have them feud. Let's get it going now instead of waiting a year.
I feel like it's well, it's been a long time since either one of us have been in this situation, but it's like dating, right? Like they're just kind of playing the field, see if this works, then play it out. And if you know, if we want to pull the cord, you know, we'll pull the cord. We'll unplug this thing. And I kind of feel like that's where they're at. I don't feel like anything that they're showing us now is going to happen. I'm getting to the point where I feel like it's lip service and it's just like these little teases to get people on the internet like us talking about what might be, how cool it would be if they did something cool. At this point, anyway. But I mean, AEW is doing some other great things. They are really – like Sammy Guevara, he came back from his deal. What he did – well, apparently he took a real shot at Matt Hardy. He wasn't supposed to. And Matt Hardy got busted this past Wednesday. Sammy grabbed the wrong chair. Just wailed Matt in the hair. Oh, so Matt Hardy got stitches. It was a hard hit. It might have been a planned work. I don't know. Matt Hardy's just that good of a worker. He just knew to look at the camera and, like, you know, show the color. But yeah, the top draws are just not there. And maybe they're not trying to burn that gas yet. But that gas isn't going to run out. I think that's what's so frustrating to me. Like, fans are going to want to see these guys for a really long time. A really long time. That's the point of AEW, I thought.
Well, here's what I'll say. I mean, one, I want to emphasize to those watching and listening on the podcast archive that we have, that I'm talking from a position of AEW is by far, head and shoulders, my favorite show. I watch the 2 hours from start to finish each week. I don't watch the WWE programming. I watch on fast forward, and I watch very little. Yeah. I'm not interested in very much of what WWE is doing. So when I'm criticizing AEW, I'm criticizing something as a product that I love, that I think can be better. I'm not criticizing it from a perspective of I think everything stinks, because it could sound like I think everything stinks.
I'm the same way, and like I wouldn't feel this strong. Sorry. Yeah, if you don't know us, you don't know us personally. You wouldn't know this about us, but like, yeah, I want it to succeed, and that's the point, man. Like,
I want it to flourish, man. I feel like right now they've got everything in place, and they're just not quite pushing the right button. So I didn't mean to interrupt there.
No, you're fine, dude. I totally agree. I absolutely agree. I think that they've stepped off the gas a little bit, and they're trying to, in their own way, develop talent in this kind of a shadow era that people probably won't remember very well, what they watched on TV and what happened when, kind of a thing. Hey, that's also a really good podcast. Tony Schiavone and Conrad Thompson, What Happened When? Amazing, funny. The funniest thing you'll listen to all week. But it's just not, it doesn't click. Even the last pay-per-view was kind of like, it was interesting. It was cool. I'm glad they did it. I was really disappointed with the world championship main event, and even the Dark Order since then, I've been really underwhelmed with. I love Colt Cabana, don't like him in the Dark Order. I'm not even sure I don't know what that's about. I have no idea what that's about. It just seems really odd. Anyway, but
yeah, I would disagree. I wouldn't use the word not clicking. I would, because again, to me, it's the, and on for until the mainstream sports came back. I know NASCAR has been back for a couple of months. PGA Tour has been back, you know, whatever. Soccer came back in early June, European soccer. Until baseball and basketball, and today, right now, there's playoff hockey on. Until we had the mainstream sports come back, what got me through the 3.5 months, 4 months, whatever, of being a sports fan with nothing to watch? Well, it was AEW. One thing. On Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, I was sitting there with my popcorn ready to watch 2 hours of wrestling. Everything else was just sort of, hey, if I see it, I see it. If I don't, I don't. But yeah, I want to highlight one thing I think they're doing well. At least I think, and I want to get your thoughts on if you.
Sure. Let's go positive. Let's attempt it positive,
right? No, Cody as TNT champion. This week they didn't do it. This week they had a tag match, him and Matt Cardona, against Dark Order members. But the TNT challenge, it kind of reminds me of the John Cena U.S. title open challenge from a few years ago in WWE, which WWE used very well. They would bring some young guys in. I think Samoa Joe came up from NXT at the time. He was not a young guy.
Kevin Owens did.
Yeah.
Rusev had a good match. Who else was it that came up? I think Eric Rowan had a good match. Anyway, yeah, Cena.
There may have even been a Sami Zayn match in that challenge series. They used that as an opportunity to get some guys, that maybe the mainstream WWE fans didn't know, got them over. So they're doing a similar thing. I mean, if an idea works, rip it off and make it yours, you know, whatever.
It's not the first time it's been done, but yeah, I mean, WCW did it with the TV title with William Regal as a heel, but it was kind of like, it was a joke kind of a thing. And then they popped out somebody. I think it was when Prince Ikea or whatever took the belt off of him.
Prince Ikea. Wow, there's a name that I hadn't heard or thought of in 25 years.
Somebody else did it too. I think Sting did it, and he ended up getting the belt taken off of him by Ming or somebody, or somebody from like the Kevin Sullivan the Dungeon Group or whatever. Anyway. But yeah, anyway, it's been around for a bit. But no, AEW's
Good bit to dust off. And so what AEW's been doing well is they brought Ricky Starks in, they brought Eddie Kingston, and Eddie Kingston cut a hellacious promo as he came out again.
They signed him.
Showcasing himself really well. And so I love what they're doing with that. I really think they're doing a good job with that. The Warhorse guy came out last week, I think it was. And they're putting these guys over. I know that there are some criticizing, saying, you know, now you have one of your top guys and he's working these 20-minute matches with guys that we've never heard of before. And maybe that's not the best way to use Cody. I think it's a great way to use Cody, because what he's doing is he's saying these guys are as good as Cody. And now they can, when they work with each other, they have the rub of having worked with a top guy.
Yeah. And it is also a way to fish talent out of the sea of pro wrestlers that there are, top end guys. I've also heard some rumors and innuendos about other dudes coming up. The heaviest one that I'm hearing rumors about is a guy named Efe. His gimmick is he is the most flamboyant out there, you know, gay pro wrestler you've ever seen in your life. but the man is a worker, amazing worker. I don't know if they might. I don't know if they want to like have him come in and overshadow Sonny Kiss, but who's also an amazing pro wrestler. And I'm not sure if he's actually gay or not. I don't know. But that's part of his deal. So he might be coming down the line too. Anyway, the point I'm getting to is that Cody Rhodes does not need a storyline. The man's too busy. I don't know if anybody actually knows how much this man does. He is their Vince. Like, he is the guy that's running it. He is the one that's pushing the buttons. He's the guy that has his finger in every single pie in AEW. Plus, he's on TV for, like you said, up to 20 minutes a week.
Yeah.
And then doing the promos and then the interviews and all this stuff. So this is a great way. I'm not saying he's a paper champion, but at the same time, it is a vehicle just to introduce people. You kind of know what the outcome of the match is going to be, right? I mean, that's the only thing about it that I'm a little bit like, okay, let's try and figure out a way to make this interesting. Let me feel like Cody's threatened, because he's not. And that just seems to be the case. I don't think they're going to end this until the next pay-per-view at least. But yeah, he doesn't need a storyline. People are always interested, and they're always interested to hear these names that you're just like, what? These guys, they work in Game Changer Wrestling. They work out in Revolution. They work for Combat Zone. You know, they might have been in Impact Wrestling a couple months ago, but here they are, mainstream pro wrestling. And Cody Rhodes is giving them a shot. And he's never made anybody look bad. But, you know, he always goes over, and you always know what's going to happen. That's at least my perception of it. And it's also showing off Cody a little bit. That's another thing. I don't think he has the reputation of a great pro wrestler. I think he's recognized as a solid pro wrestler and a very smart pro wrestling mind. But I also think this is an opportunity for him to go out there and say, you know what? I can do it. I can do it week in, week out, anybody, any style. Let me show you what's up. So there's a couple facets to it. But I think ultimately he's a VP, and that he doesn't need to be involved in a storyline, and he doesn't need to be putting that much time into the TV product. So I think that's, but it's a good end. It's a good result for all parties involved.
You know what's interesting is when you said about the it's whatever it is, it's the perception out there that he's not a great pro wrestler, that he's a good solid pro wrestler. I think about, I did a piece a few months ago for our website about the real athletic backgrounds of pro wrestlers. You know, looking up guys who were MMA guys or football players or high school wrestlers, amateur college wrestlers, that kind of thing. I mean, he was a two-time state champion down your way, down in Georgia. And it makes me think, because I have a nephew, one of my nephews is a two-time state runner-up wrestler. He'll be a senior this year, so he's got his last chance to win a state championship coming up, hopefully, this year. His dad was an Olympic trials competitor when he was in college 25 years ago. And, of course, so this young man, my nephew, walks around when he comes, I mean, because his dad's a very successful coach and of course has a reputation of having been in the Olympic trials in 96. When Brady, my nephew, goes to wrestle, I mean, he's got this aura about him, like, whoa, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I think about Cody Rhodes showing up, Cody Runnel showing up, and his dad's rooting for him. And I think that's Dusty Rhodes' son that my kid's wrestling right now, you know, and that kind of thing. So, I mean, he's been carrying that with him throughout his athletic career. He's been carrying that legend behind him, also that burden. There's a burden that comes with being the son of a legend. And he carries it well. I mean, not everybody carries it well. You think about some of the other stars, big stars in wrestling. I just saw
his brother. His brother didn't handle it well.
Didn't handle it well. You think of Jerry Lawler and, of course, the tragedy that happened to his son, Brian. There aren't a lot of guys that the son even approaches the level of the father. And in the case of Cody, I mean, you know, he's got a long way to go, obviously, because Dusty is one of the guys portion of this business. But Cody's is doing as well as anybody, carrying both the burden and the positive of being the son of a legend.
Absolutely. He's probably who could be better? Maybe Vince McMahon himself?
Right,
like I don't know, like that maybe yeah. that's like I can't think of anybody else that was like, they showed their father up in such a great way or took what their father did and built on it and made it their own, you know? I mean, even like I think the name of names, when I think of like the name of names of a generational talent is Randy Orton. I don't think there's been any, you know, father and then son combo where the son just blew the father's, you know, reputation or accomplishments away. But Randy's a pain in the ass. And if he didn't have Ric Flair, if Triple H didn't view him as a younger brother, that there, Randy Orton would have, he might be a tragic story, but he had those guys looking out for him. He didn't have that in himself to go out and say, look, this is what I'm going to do. This is who I'm going to be as a pro wrestler. And you can tell by the fact that he's working the same gimmick since, you know, he got into the company. But no, Cody, what he's doing is so impressive. And Tony Khan makes no bones about that. This is Cody Rhodes' show. This is his show. He's the guy. The guys backstage, they all talk about like, Cody's doing this for me. Cody's helping me with this. This is Cody. He is their Vince. And it's the difference in the product. The foundation is there. The foundation for greatness is there. The foundation for doing something really cool, really entertaining in pro wrestling is there. But man, it's plotting along, man. I'm getting tired of this, like, getting stuck in first and second gear kind of thing of, like, when are we going to show people what we can do? When are we going to show people how we can flourish, how we can be entertainers, and why we started AEW, why they started AEW? I talk about AEW like I do. It's like a sports team that I'm rooting for because it is.
Yeah, and I think we're both similar in that mindset. You're a big Georgia Bulldogs guy, obviously. I'm a big UVA sports guy, and I'm as critical of my guys and my teams as I am, and I love them, and that's why I'm more critical, and I want to see them succeed even more and flourish even more, and I feel the same way about AEW. And I said this the other day, and I'll kind of flesh it out and get your thoughts. My feeling is I think that what may be holding back AEW to a degree is that, you know, the key guys there, Cody, the Bucks, and maybe
losing you a little bit. You got me. I lost you a little bit, buddy.
They came in, and I think a lot of folks assumed, well, this is right. They just put themselves on. Well, a couple things I'll say about that, because the folks who say that don't realize that you know, the wrestling they loved back in the day, Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair were the bookers back in the 80s, classic NWA, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, WCW. They were the guys calling the shots, and they put the belt on themselves. Yeah. Nobody criticized them for that. And you know, you go back, I mean, every you can go to every territory, and Jerry Lawler owned Mid-South, or Mid-Southern Wrestling, Memphis Wrestling. He owned it. He was a part owner of the company. I mean, you go down a line, that's the case. And so nobody criticized those guys back in the days. And so, but I think that these guys are like, they're so concerned with not using this as a vanity project that they're not doing what's best for the company, which would be to put themselves over. That's why AEW had the mainstream buzz that it had at the beginning. And now they're so concerned with putting everybody else over that they're forgetting what drew us to it in the first place.
Yeah. I think there. I mean, it's two things. WWE's doing it. We skipped the Braun Strowman thing, mostly because I really don't care about Braun Strowman. But it's kind of a deal where it's like, this is a shadow era of wrestling. I would be surprised, like, when we look back a couple years, like, what do we remember? What are the highlights? What are the spots? What about this time, other than no fans, do we really remember? WWE is doing the exact same thing. They're bringing back Shelton Benjamin. He's coming back up. And I love Shelton Benjamin. I think that's one of WWE's biggest misses ever. Montel Vontavious Porter, of all people in the pro wrestling business, has found his way back into the WWE and is actually doing good work. I think he's doing good work. And they're hiding the fact that Bobby Lashley can't talk, but he might be one of the greatest athletes that's ever lived. Braun Strowman can't talk. Save his life, but he has that look, man. I don't want to go this far as insulting the man, but he's almost kind of reminded me of Lex Luger at this point, just like the most ultimate pro wrestling look, but cannot deliver the entertainment, man. Just can't do it. Just can't do it. So AEW's looking at it the same thing. They're not stupid. And they understand that this is a era in pro wrestling that you do have the space to work with dudes like Marco Stunt, who's on TV almost every week, right? Working with these tag teams, Private Party, that need a lot of work, that need some polishing, that need to kind of figure it out. I'm not saying – I'm not trying to put Marco Stunt and Private Party in the same. But you get what I'm saying. Like, just give them that space to kind of figure it out. You know, try it on, throw it away if it doesn't work. And then maybe save it for later if it does. I think maybe that's part of it too, but they're saving it for later. But man, like, they've got so much firepower. So much firepower, and I think they're wasting their time on Wednesday night. I think they've outgrown that time slot, and in the fact that there's not much else going on in the world that's live that people care about, dude, just go to Monday night. Just say, you know what, you guys want to put NXT against us because you think they're your third brand and they can handle us? Fine, cool. We'll go to Mondays. See you later. We'll start at 9 o'clock. All right.
Because I think I'll agree with you there. I would love to see that. I think that they've outgrown the time slot. Definitely. They have earned, I mean, they're in prime time, but they've earned the prime time slot. They've earned a chance at a Monday Night War. And I think from the beginning of the pandemic, they have not let the pandemic and the lack of fans, keep their shows from being compelling enough to still want to watch every week. WWE's lost me. I mean, I keep up with it from a news standpoint. And so I want to at least keep a touch with it to know what's going on, but I turn it on a Monday night. And now with competition, because now there's baseball, now there's NBA, yep. Now there's NHL. Even back before when there wasn't those things, it was hard for me to keep watching. I would usually find very something hard on YouTube after a while and just watch and say, okay, I watched enough WWE. I'll read about it tomorrow morning and I'll find out what happened. Now it's like, gosh, I can watch the Nats or the Braves, or I can watch LeBron, and you want me to watch Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt again? I mean, it's not happening. So, AEW though, I mean, now if I watch the baseball game and it ends, I'm staying up late to watch the AEW show. And so, they've outgrown the slot, and I think that they've done well enough to say, you know, to not waste what they've got at this point. I think both AEW and WWE are saying, okay, let's wait it out. Let's wait till we get fans back. We don't know when that's going to be. So stop saving stuff. Let's throw the guns out there. You know, throw your arsenal out there and see what you can do with it.
I think if they come back, it's going to be very limited locations that they can come back to. I think they'll be running the Southeast a lot. I think that just by
be in heaven as far as that goes. Yeah,
I might be seeing Monday Night Raw down the street, man. I live in, you know, there's a place with a civic center here. We can do that. Some big fields. We could run that. Anyway, it's kind of a joke. But, man, we do have some big places. It's kind of interesting that we haven't seen bigger performances in Athens, Georgia. Logically, the point I'm trying to make is, like, I don't think that, especially as socially conscious as AEW is, I don't think we're going to see them running in front of very many fans until next year. WWE, I don't know, man. I think they might be looking at it as, who's going to let us go? Who's going to let us do it? I really do think, like, they were looking at SummerSlam. Like, I have very, very, I cannot confirm it, but they were looking at having people buying areas around the ring, groups of people coming in together and running SummerSlam like that. Yeah.
Well, their product suffers for the lack of fan interaction because the rest of
everybody's. Everybody's done.
I don't think the AEW product is suffering from it. I don't agree with that. I think to me, the WWE product, they're the way they've trained their performers to work. relies on sort of a call and response, kind of like in music. And when there's no response, you know, the call feels flat. I mean, the AEW the AEW guys are more, there are more indie guys there. And I know that there are some who say, oh, there's too many indie guys there, but the indie guys are used to just working. They're not used to just working towards hard camera side. Mm-hmm. They're used to working and
theater in the round.
They're working a live show and it just happens to work well. And the AEW presentation is more like a sports, trying to be like a sports event than it is like a filmed TV event, which is what WWE is doing. So, WWE needs, that's what Vince, he knows he's going to have to pay somebody to let him have a show with fans that they can have response from, because the show is lacking without the fans cheering or booing or whatever the case may be. So I agree with you in that respect. That he will be the first and that AEW, they've made a point to be, you know, to be over the top with how socially conscious, and that's one of their marketing strategies, is to say, look, you know, we have, you know, all the bases covered from a social consciousness standpoint, and so as a result, they're not.
Man, I might have lost you just there, Chris. Hey, man.
Oh, yeah. My internet connection in my podcast studio, I've still got to have some things worked on here, it seems. So a couple times we've had you freeze a little bit. So
no, you're fine. I was wondering if it was me. Like, my wife is trying to work.
I think it's me, actually. Yeah, so I've got to get a booster up here or something like that. I'm on the second floor. I was on the second floor at the other house, but I had a different internet setup. So got to work on that. Folks at Comcast, if you're watching or listening in on the archive, help us out here. It works great downstairs. I've got this great studio here. Need to work on it. So, hey, we're at the hour mark anyway, Josh. So I think I may go ahead and wrap us up. So what are you going to be looking forward to? Just real quick, what are you going to be looking forward to in the next week from a wrestling standpoint or sports standpoint in general?
Dude, last night was Atlanta Braves clutch moment. You had Nick Markakis. He came back from, you know, he called out of the season. You know, you got to understand that. And but he came back and he was in the starting rotation for the first time. And you know, he walked it off for us. So can't complain about that. That was pretty awesome. So we're big Braves people around here. TV, it's our regular viewing this time of year, unless there's something really interesting going on. But from the pro wrestling standpoint, Southern Violence and Wrestling is having an event this Saturday night. Southern Brewing Company, Athens, Georgia, just down the road from me, a long ways away from Mr. Graham and most of y'all. But it's a fun gig, man. It's a fun time. Great just to get out there and watch some live pro wrestling and hear it and smell it and all those good things. But it's at a brewery also, so that's an amazing bonus. But as far as the pro wrestling world in general, man, I'm just kind of keeping my ear to the ground, see what's next, see what's happening. The week-to-week stuff, just, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff is so much more interesting than what's happening on online or on TV. But hopefully, you know, we'll see what happens with WWE, NXT, and, you know, see if they can get our blood pumping a little bit and Raw Underground. Let's see if that gets our motors running. What about you, man? What are you up to? What are you watching?
This was a fun talk, and I like the behind-the-scenes stuff more, too, and so we were able to get some in-depth good talk there. I'm a baseball person, too, and so, you know, for months I couldn't tell what day of the week it was, but now I can again. It's because of baseball. Baseball's every day. You know what day of the week it is. I know today's Friday. The O's, the Nats have the O's for a weekend series. So for our local guys up here, local fans up here, and I'm very fortunate that my wife is also a baseball fan, so she, as a result, I can watch the games. And not feel like I'm short.
Cutting out.
Ticket holders here. When we got the World Series tickets last year, actually, if we committed to being season ticket holders this year, so we've gotten refund on that. So it all worked out great. We got three World Series games last year and we got refunded, but I would love to be at the games. I miss being there live, but you know, the big screen TV in the living room and Easy access to popcorn and drinks is okay as a fallback.
There you go. That's all right.
And I know today's Friday as a result of the fact that a series is starting. You know, from a wrestling standpoint, looking forward to seeing how I'm actually into this Orange Cassidy, Chris Jericho thing. I know it's going to end a certain way, but I just love what that, it's been fun to see what they've been doing with that odd feud. So
hopefully it ends with Cassidy going over and AEW starts to have some homegrown talent for once. I'm still mad about Brian Cage. I'm salty. I'm a salty dog about that mess right there.
Yeah.
But the FTW championship. Oh, the FTW championship meant a lot to my childhood. Oh boy.
Actually, me too. I popped when Taz brought that out. I will admit I did. So I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to some baseball this weekend. And, you know, if nothing else, Josh, we're still at least talking about the possibility. Now we have schedules in college football. So, you know, I'm going to be positive about that. I've got games on the calendar. I'm not going to take them off from that standpoint. Yeah. My first game will be September 11th. Outside opportunity. What am I thinking of? The odds aren't great, but there's still a chance I may be actually helping broadcast that game. So
there you go.
From the VMI standpoint, VMI UVA, UVA opens up with, at least right now, they're opening up with VMI on Friday, September 11th. So who knows? I may be in the booth.
I'll be tuning in. Is the SEC. Well, right now, the SEC, we're fighting the cattiest of catty versions of Florida and Alabama on restructuring the schedule. So this season, Georgia was already supposed to play Alabama at Alabama, right? Okay. Florida plays LSU every year. Georgia also plays Auburn every year. So Georgia is playing Florida, Auburn, Alabama on the regular schedule. That's before, you know, you even get to anybody else, or Virginia. That was before you even get to that potential matchup. So the idea is that the SEC, originally the thought was that they were going to add the next two, opposite division opponents in line. For Georgia, it would have been Mississippi and Arkansas. Let's go.
Yeah.
But Florida, they would have added Alabama and A&M. That does sound heavy, but at the same time, like, their schedule was as soft as it was ever going to get this year. Their out-of-conference stuff was like, Florida State sucks. I don't even know if Florida State's ever going to come back, to be honest with you. But they didn't have anybody. LSU and Georgia. That was – anyway. So those guys, they're holding it all up. We're waiting to see on the SEC front what we're going to do. September 26th is going to be when the SEC starts. But we don't know who's playing who when, because people – are trying to lobby for Alabama's trying to lobby for a weaker schedule. So there you go.
There's politics in football too, as it turns out. Yes, indeed. Well, we're still talking about it. That's the fun part. Or at least we're talking about something that's possible going to come and that we all live for on Saturdays. Hey, Josh, thank you for your time today as always. And for our folks out there listening and watching and tuning in, thank you for your time. And we will talk to you again soon.